Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, folks?
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Kind of some funky stuff going on here, folks. It's Patriot Nation Radio Show Live. We got one heck of a show on tap for you tonight. You may remember the story of Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Schaller, the only commissioned officer to stand up and say, hey, we screwed up in Afghanistan and our leaders need to be held accountable, and was thrown in the brig for speaking out, was willing to give up everything. It's an unbelievable story, and his mom and dad are going to join us this evening to discuss that very situation, as Lieutenant Colonel Stewart has, I believe, a gag order on, but we'll get all the details right after this, so stick around.
Thank you for listening to Patriot Nation Radio, 347-637-3942.
Attention conservatives, big social media is targeting conservatives like you and me in an effort to silence us and the truth. The free speech social media that you have waited for is here at LibertyRush.com. No longer do you have to be distracted by fake news. Join the war on fake news at LibertyRush.com, the official alternative with no libtard rhetoric. Guaranteed. LibertyRush.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Bray, America's favorite patriotic rocker, and you are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Network.
That's right, folks. Dave Bray, of course, we are huge supporters of him and his music and his mission. He is America's most patriotic rocker. That is out today. Make sure you get on over to DaveBrayUSA.com. Check out Music on a Mission, the Storyteller Edition, as well as other stuff. He's got some new songs out, and things are just going fantastic for Dave and his musical career, because he's bounced back bigger, better, and stronger than ever as a solo artist out on his own. Again, that's DaveBrayUSA.com. Also, Music on a Mission, Storyteller Edition. I think I said it. It's out now. You don't want to miss that. If you don't have it, get it. A lot of cool merchandise. You can wear red shirts on Friday and blue shirts on Monday and do all the fun stuff. You've got everything right there at DaveBrayUSA.com. Great friend of the show. So I always support him and his music. And we don't ask anything in return from Dave except for more music. Keep playing great tunes and being the patriotic rocker that you are. And we will support you and promote you to the ends of the earth on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And, of course, you heard Liberty Rush, LibertyRush.com. Social media without the libtarded rhetoric. You want to check it out now, my friend Rob. He's the guy who put that all together, and he's doing great things with his own social media, again, without the libtarded rhetoric. So, folks, again, we're going to have these fine folks come on the show here this evening and discuss what's happening, what's upcoming, what has happened, and where this road wound and twisted to where it is now with Lieutenant Colonel Schaller free. I don't know if you want to call, you know, what happened to him and where he is now still freedom, but you know, we'll get the gist of the whole story right now as Mr. and Mrs. Stuart Schaller join the show. Kathy and Stu, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for your time tonight. I appreciate it greatly.
We appreciate being on with you and your audience.
Excellent.
So
we've been doing this now almost 9 years. It's a labor of love, you know what I mean?
Yep. You're a good patriot. Thank you.
We've been so honored to have great guests and try to bring the truth. You know, every story like such as your son's story always comes with mainstream media propaganda sometimes, lies, twisting the facts to fit an agenda, and all this other stuff that occurs with mainstream media if it doesn't go along with their agenda or their narrative. And, of course, Stewart standing up for himself goes against everything the left and the media stands for. Leading up to this event and what happened to your son, what was life like? I'm sure he joined the military in response to 9/11 like so many people did. As he got older, he's mad, maybe he wanted to join. I don't know the parameters. Maybe you could share that. But 17-year veteran willing to throw it all away for honor and for his dedication to the military service that he was 17 years into when he spoke his heart.
Well,
and then this horrible withdrawal,
horrendous
withdrawal by this administration. So many, and I do this, I've been trying to do this every show. Wait, hold on a second. I have the paper somewhere. Here it is. Because 20 years they were on the battlefield there. 17, your son was in the military. So that's almost the whole campaign in Afghanistan. And I'm sure he knows brothers and sisters from that fought on the battlefields of Afghanistan, many of which right now are suffering. What did we fight for? What are we doing? What's going on? And the thoughts. We lose 22 a day, folks, according to statistics, to suicide of our military veterans. So if you are beside yourself over this and you're sitting alone and you're contemplating something horrendous, 1-800-273-8255 is the suicide prevention hotline. Call, please. Please do. There's people there for you. Okay. Sorry, sometimes I get on a rant. God bless you.
That's okay.
Okay. I don't know if you
so
heard
do
my
I.
question.
So do
rambling.
I, Mark.
We've been on a rant.
So now it's
been. I've been on a rant for 2 months, so I get it.
Right.
But I will give you the straight story.
Yes, sir.
So Stewart is out of the brig. He went to court-martial. He is now, quote-unquote, free, but I use the term he's still captive because he has not yet been released by the Marine Corps. He is still on a gag order. You are correct there. We are awaiting the Secretary of Navy, Carlos Del Toro, to sign and accept his resignation, which they have technically already agreed to in a plea deal that Stewart reached while he was in prison. And that plea deal said that he would plead guilty to charges, which was never, ever any doubt in his mind. He knew what he did. He accepted accountability. And as you said, he's the only individual in this whole Afghanistan affair that accepted his guilt and accountability for mistakes. We know that the leadership has not. So Stewart is out. I guess there are two chapters to this story. The first chapter, most of your listeners are probably aware that Stewart spoke up on August 26th, the day that the 13 service members died due to a suicide bomb. And
which was
that's
preventable.
The first story, which was preventable. So he was frustrated. He was angry. And he called them out. And they did not like truth to power. The second chapter
right.
of this story, the second chapter, which is what I've talked about a lot the last month, is the way they have treated Stewart in the last 2 months. It's been horrific. I refer to it as a toxic culture. If you go on a site that we brought up called istandwithstu.com, S-T-U, you can read his statement that he read to the judge and the court martial. It is long but very powerful, and it will speak to the way his leaders and his peers and the Marine Corps has treated him.
Right. I'm going to pull that up here in a minute. So,
it's 9 pages long. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mrs. Scheller, Kathy. Shall I call you Kathy or Mrs. Scheller?
You can call me Kathy.
Okay, Kathy. As a mom, knowing your son through and through, honorable, what was it like for you knowing that they threw him in the brig? Was he in solitary confinement? How does that feel as a parent, as a mom, to see your honorable, hardworking, country-loving son in the brig?
So let me go back. Oh, first of all, I was angry. I was so angry. I was so upset. I was heartbroken. I couldn't sleep. I was beside myself. But I wanted to pull the covers up over my head and pretend that it wasn't going on, that this does not happen in the United States of America. They don't treat their decorated war heroes who have given their entire life, 17 years of their life, not on a base, not behind a desk, but on the sand, in the field, tip of the arrow, protecting his fellow service people, out there with his gun, being shot at all the time, with removing IEDs, protecting people. I mean, I couldn't. It's an exemplary record, not a blemish on it. He's in the top three tiers and was moving upward in the military. They loved him. He's highly decorated. He's held all kinds of great, even from MARSOC, leading and training schools for our infantry. He loved his Marines. He trained them carefully. So the fact that they would do this to someone who was clearly in anguish and in pain, and he spoke out, because if you've been a field officer, you understand strategy. You understand that you don't put lives at risk. You don't ask the Taliban, who's been your enemy for 17 years, you don't ask them to protect your service people. You don't give up the safe zone of the other airport where you could protect your people. You don't put them around hurricane fencing and ask your enemy to protect them. So, you know, it's just, and I'm going to take you back. When he first started with the Marines, he was in the 1-8. And the 1-8 had just fought horrendous battles. And then he came in right after that in the 1-8. And he was so proud of the 1-8. And I want to remind you that it was the 1-8 that ended this with the suicide vest. People right. don't make that connection. It was personal. It meant something to him. And as he was reading this, people were sending him pictures of what was going on. And he was upset. And he even said in one of his videos, all you had to do was come and talk to me, and I would have gotten back in line and I would have submitted. But the Marine Corps was so angry with him that they went about trying to destroy his life, his name, his credibility. They took his command away from him. They tried to suggest, oh, gee, you know, don't commit suicide, as if putting suicide in his mind. They made his life so
inhospitable. I'm going to say they're still doing it.
And they're still doing it. And you need to read that statement, and I want you to know that this is still going on even afterwards. So they did all of this, and they made him – he's a Marine. Did you think they were going to treat him like this and he was going to back down? One of two things was going to happen. He was going to commit suicide, or he was going to continue fighting. And he continued fighting until they had to, you know, throw him in solitary confinement for 9 days, and not just solitary confinement. You know, he's in a room, a tiny room with a metal door and a little slit. They wouldn't even let him make phone calls. Okay? He went out into the yard. He wasn't allowed around another human being.
So here's our moral to the story. We're telling Americans, if they're treating a grade 5, 17-year decorated war hero this way because he posted on Facebook and spoke truth to power, if they're treating him this way, how would they treat your 18-year-old daughter if she had a problem, if she was sexually harassed, if she went to her command and said, I need help? They're not, they don't care. They're not there to help. If you
right.
challenge and speak up.
Well, at least in our case. I can't say it's every case, but it does depend on your command as to how they treat it.
Very
and
true.
We're seeing this now. And I also want to let you know that our son was very involved in suicide prevention. He worked with, everyone's like, oh my gosh, this crazy school bus out in the woods. Well, he has a 50-acre farm, and they have school buses there, and they would host programs through A Hero, which is a suicide prevention, to come, you know, have a bonfire, sit around, talk with other people, you know, have some fellowship, you know, less things that are bothering you. And that's why the school buses were there. They could either camp or sleep in the school buses. He did work with that. He also does an entrepreneurial site, and he was encouraging Marines to start their dream and their entrepreneurship well before they get out of the service. So it's going by the time
right.
they get out. So they would have something to look forward to. So it was important to him, and he knew how many suicides would happen if this failed exit, when they were saying, just go get counseling. And he knew people needed more than counseling. They needed accountability, and they needed to know what they did mattered, because it did matter.
Right. It's really unbelievable what we're witnessing here, that they're politicizing the military. Like, it's politics and military should be separate 100%. Unfortunately, sometimes when we analyze things, we realize the forefathers missed a couple of things when they were writing the Constitution. But I have his statement here from IStandWithStu.com. And
yes.
A fantastic picture of your son there.
Thank you.
Decorations and everything. So I'll read it. 9/11 enraged and pained me like all Americans. But unlike many of my peers, the events of 9/11 aren't what compelled me to join the military. For me, I found myself working as an accountant in a cubicle post-college. From my cubicle one day in 2004, I was able to watch the Marines moving through the city of Fallujah on the news. At the center of this violent attack was the unit V-18. Watching those Marines filled me with awe, respect, and love. I knew how much I loved America, and I was mad at myself for not making more sacrifices for the country. I called the Marine Corps that day and began my journey. After 17 years, I want to express how grateful I am for everything the Marine Corps did to mold me into the man I am. Despite the recent events, I owe the Marine Corps a lot. The Marine Corps for me was never supposed to be a career, but I've stayed as long as I have for two reasons. Love for the Marines, and two, the opportunity to make the difference on the battlefield as a leader. I truly believe America is the greatest country in the world. I truly believe the American military is the greatest military in the world. I truly believe the Marine Corps has the best talent of all the military services. But I also truly believe fundamental change needs to occur in the military. I have observed that the general officers are unwilling to hold themselves accountable. I've always loved the Marines, but as my recent public comments illustrate, I have started questioning the long-standing system of the Marine Corps and, for that matter, the military as a whole. Prior to the withdrawal of Afghanistan, I was reflecting on the often-told stories about the previous commandants, Wilson and Barrow. Those two commandants led the United States Marine Corps after the failures in Vietnam. The narrative told today is that Commandants Wilson and Barrow fixed the service and their generational shift. They fixed the service by raising the standards on the junior enlisted Marines. Said another way, the junior enlisted Marines weren't capable of winning the Vietnam War or the next war, so generals needed to fix the service. I was thinking about the parallels of Vietnam and Afghanistan. I read General Bergen's letter to the force dated 18 August. This letter, in my opinion, perfectly illustrates senior military leaders' inability to see the true pain in service members following a failed war effort. General Bergen told service members their sacrifice was worth it without offering any connection back to bigger purpose. He concluded the letter with how service members should go seek counseling. At no point did he acknowledge any failures of the leadership. A week after reading his statement, I was sitting in an office on August 26th, and I was told that 13 service members had been killed and many more injured in an SVS attack. I also knew the majority of casualties were from V-18, my first unit. My mind was immediately taken back to my friend Dave Borden, who was hit with an SVS when he served in Ramadi, together with V-18. It was the same situation playing out again. I thought about all the time I spent with Dave and Walter Reed and in the halfway treatment house months later. I thought about Lieutenant Corporal Gluff, who was killed in that SVEST attack, next to Dave. And at the same time as these thoughts ran through my mind, I was receiving pictures from a friend of my phone from Marines who were involved in the recent Abbey Gate, Afghanistan SVEST incident. In that moment, I had clarity. I realized the military was continuing to make the same mistakes because senior leaders continued to diagnose the wrong problem. I concluded that our senior leaders were either unable or unwilling to have an honest discussion about our failures in public forum that would necessitate real change. I also decided that quietly addressing these concerns within the chain of command would be ineffective. I knew my complaints would never be heard by the commandant, the SECDEF, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, or the American people if I went through the proper channel. Reference the charges I tried to prefer against General McKenzie. It was a perfect example of how going through the system doesn't work. In my first video, I connected the failed Afghan withdrawal, the attacks on V-18, and General Berger's letter to the force. I stated that reason people are so upset right now is not because of the Marines on the battlefield. A service member has always rose to the occasion and done extraordinary things. The reason people are upset right now is because the senior leaders let them down and none of them are raising their hands and taking accountability. I ended by saying, I've been fighting for 17 years and I'm willing to throw it all away to say to my senior leaders, I demand accountability. That Thursday night, as the video started to go viral, I stated on my LinkedIn page that I did not plan to resign despite all the demands for my resignation. At that time, that is how I felt. I wanted to remain in the Marine Corps. When I came into work the next morning on August 27th, the first person I spoke to was Colonel Emmel. He asked what I was trying to achieve with the video. He told me he didn't think I would be able to affect any real change. He then told me that morning that I would not be relieved immediately. Told me to go home for the weekend and an investigation would take place. And that following the investigation, the command would decide if it warranted my relief or follow-on administrative action. When Colonel Emmel left my office, my battalion executive officer came in so we could conduct the turnover. He was going to run battalion in my absence. He said, I don't need anything from you, sir. I just want you to know how much I respect you and how political and expletive up the Marine Corps has gotten. Beep. It's an F word, folks. Try not to curse on the show as much as possible. Sometimes I can't help it. I'm from New York. That's why a lot of guys are getting out. That's why our old gunner got out. In fact, I first heard about your video when our old gunner called me this morning. He said your new boss just posted a video. That is all true. I'm sure he's going down, but someone needed to have the courage to say it. Please tell him how proud we all are of him. My battalion executive officer then went on to say, we all know it's political. You know, the Joint Chiefs who signed a letter condemning the January 6th attack. How political was that? I'm not saying I condone the January 6th attack, but I am saying for all the Joint Chiefs to sign a letter on that topic, but not to condemn any of the other recent riots that have caused more damage and death is purely political, to which I responded, yes, those idiots on January 6th were unorganized and unintelligent. If ever there was a force that used deliberate thought, the outcome could be much worse. At no time did I ever advocate for a violent overthrow of the government. I was led into the conversation of the January 6th attack by someone I trusted. Then my words were twisted. Furthermore, the investigating officer then took that statement and led every witness he interviewed with questions about my involvement in the January 6th attack. This is my perception. Was an attempt by the Marine Corps to paint me into something I'm not. The Marine Corps, despite their best efforts, was not able to find any evidence of insurrection. In the Marine Corps, could have charged me with insurrection. They would have. Then later, that same Friday the 27th, while I was back at my house without explanation, Colonel Emmel called me back into work, even though he told me to take the weekend off. When I came back into work, he relieved me for my cause. Never explained why he did a 180, and I didn't ask. I'm sure if it was my battalion executive office comments or decision made above Colonel Emmel, but at the time, not even understanding what my battalion executive officer had said, I agreed that the relief was best for the Marine Corps, and I wanted and still want what was best for the Marine Corps. When I left work, I made a post stating that I had been relieved and that my command was doing exactly what I would have done. after publicly announcing my release at the time, I still planned on... Hold on one second. Where was I? I still planned on allowing the investigation to run its course and remain in the Marine Corps without further statement. But after my release, when I got home and back on my social media, I saw a post from my old commanding officer, Colonel Haas. He commented below my statement on LinkedIn that I didn't plan to resign and stated if Stuart Scheller was honorable, he would resign. This comment devastated me. He didn't call me. He didn't text me. He didn't email me. Someone who even stated in my second video that I loved like a father demonstrated that he didn't care about me at all. And even though he's retired, Colonel Hobbs is still very active in the Marine Corps. In fact, he called after my second video and left me a voicemail stating that he and General Miller were discussing my situation. That's the influence Colonel Hobbs still has. After reading his comment following my release, my thoughts went from disappointment to anger. It was the first time I started thinking about resigning. I started thinking, if my call for accountability can result in me being fired and investigated in 24 hours, my greatest mentor in the Marine Corps can immediately turn on me without any empathy from me as a human being. Maybe my senior leaders don't care about me at all. Maybe this is not an organization that I want to be part of. This led me to my second post on Friday the 27th, where I stated last night when I posted the video, I immediately had multiple Marines call and ask me to take down the post. We all agree with you, Sue, but nothing will change, and it will come at a huge personal cost to you. Now that I've had time to process, I'll offer this. We can't all be wrong. If you all agree, then step up. They only have the power because we allow it. What if we all demand accountability? Every generation needs a revolution. This post is where the Marine Corps and I started parting ways dramatically. My calls for revolution were always about changing the system, a system that centralizes power and fails to hold senior leaders accountable, a system that will immediately turn on you if you speak out. Colonel Emmel called me that Friday night and made it very clear that I was heading towards legal action with the most recent post and reminded me again of the social media policy. So I took Saturday to contemplate my situation. In that day, I came to the conclusion that Marine Corps didn't really care about me, and that best case, I would be hidden in an office for 3 years as a failure. But most likely, I was heading towards a BOI for separation based on my use of the word revolution. This situation led me into the second video that I posted on Sunday the 29th. The second video was me declaring that I felt like the general officers and leaders of the military didn't understand or care. In the video, I stated my intention to resign and give up my retirement. I also stated I want to be clear that I love the Marine Corps. And then I went on to say, follow me and we will bring the whole fucking system down. If I could go back, I would have chosen different words, but at no time was that a call to violence. I was stating that the system is broken and needs to be rebuilt. I still feel this is the case. I still feel fundamental change is required. I still feel a revolution or rebuilding the broken system is the only way to fix the shortfalls of senior leaders are unable or unwilling to fix themselves. Following the post of the second video that Saturday afternoon, my CO texted me to call him. Immediately after he texted me, the SOIXO called me. I answered his call and spoke to him for over 10 minutes. He obviously thought I was suicidal, which I knew I wasn't. He kept stating that he would come meet me, and I kept stating that it wasn't necessary. We repeated the same thing over and over to each other until finally I got frustrated and said, that's enough. I answered your call out of professional courtesy. I am not suicidal, and I'm not to continue having this conversation. And then the phone call ended. I didn't call Colonel Emmel back because I had just spoke to his XO for a great length of time, and I assumed that was sufficient. I kept my phone on for the rest of the day, and no one called me until later that night. Two Marines I know, Major Cummings and Lieutenant Colonel Helminski, texted me that NCIS arrived at their houses respectively. Both told me NCIS was looking for me. Which I responded, why didn't they just call me and ask where I was? They didn't know, so I told both of them the same thing. I'm fine, and I can talk to NCIS tomorrow morning at 8. When I show up to work, I'm not suicidal. Then I saw a statement released by the Marine Corps Public Affairs Office that stated the Marine Corps is trying to locate Lieutenant Colonel Scheller to ensure his safety and the safety of those around him. I was furious about this statement. I assumed that the Marine Corps was really trying to locate me, that they would have been smart enough to call me. The SOIXO was unable to reach me. My peers were able to reach me. This seemed like an obvious attempt from the Marine Corps to paint me as suicidal. which was another indicator to me that the system didn't really care about me, but only wanted to protect itself if they really thought I was suicidal. Why not call me? Unless they were actually hoping I would commit suicide. Or maybe they were going to accidentally commit suicide for him. Maybe they had some plan like the trail of bodies behind the Clinton administration, where people wind up committing suicide with two bullets. Who knows what their plan was? It kind of seems ominous and scary. When I went into work the next morning, the Marine Corps narrative of my unstable mental health continued to be discussed. My CO told me he wanted me to volunteer for mental evaluation. I told him that was not necessary, so he ordered me to get a mental health evaluation. I did, and they determined what I knew all along, which I wasn't mentally unstable, just very angry at what I perceived to be a consistent betrayal. The mental health angle is frustrating for many reasons. The Marine Corps never ordered me to get mental health evaluation when I missed the birth of my first child while deployed to Afghanistan. The Marine Corps never ordered me to get mental health evaluation when I missed the funerals of all three of my grandparents while on different deployments. The Marine Corps only cared about my mental health once I publicly challenged the leadership. After I was released from the hospital, I felt like all bets were off. I felt like the Marine Corps was out to get me, and I didn't feel a single officer or previous peer had my back. Jeff referenced the comments about me in the investigation. They called me narcissistic, egotistical, entitled, too relaxed, abusive, bipolar, poor selection of battalion command, treats people like shit, embellished combat record, smirks unnecessarily, so sports January 6th attacks, should go to jail. No one said anything positive, not one. This time I hadn't actually read the investigation. I could feel the contempt in every conversation. The following day, on Tuesday, 31st, I submitted my resignation letter because I knew the divide between the Marine Corps and myself was too deep to repair. The next day, Wednesday, September 1st, I made four posts that I later deleted. Two were directly to General Berger. In one post, I stated that I heard General Berger was trying to court-martial me. I then went on to comment about his current initiative to revoke the authority of battalion commanders to manage their unit's social media. To me, this is an example of system centralizing control. In the second post to General Berger, I thanked him for addressing the need to discuss the withdrawal from Afghanistan. The third post I made that day was in response to the attack on my small business. I spoke to my business partner who told me the MCCS was potentially pulling my product, the Perfect Ribbon, off the shelves of the Marine Corps exchanges because of my actions. Again, this was just another example of how I thought the Marine Corps was unlawfully attacking me. Again, I thought, why would they do that if they actually cared about me? My fourth post that day was my wife. She wasn't answering my phone calls. I wasn't able to take leave. Even though I knew she had taken down her social media, I knew my plea to her would be forwarded. But in hindsight, I shouldn't have made any of those posts. So I ended up deleting all four posts from that Wednesday. I concluded that I was under duress and that the post didn't accurately reflect my message. I also deeply regret the way I handled what should have been a private conversation with my wife. But I never went back and deleted my message demanding accountability or how I thought the system was failing. I made another post on Thursday, September 2nd, clarifying my position and demand for accountability. I very clearly stated that I planned to bring the whole system down in constitutional manner with one loud voice. At this point, I felt the world was against me, and all I could see was the hypocrisy of the system. Everything I thought about frustrated me. I made another post on Labor Day that quoted the right in the Declaration of Independence for the people to throw off the old form of government isn't serving the interests of the people. I also illustrated my frustration with general officers who take jobs with high-paying government contractors following their retirement. It seems highly unethical to me and is another symptom of our inability to hold senior leaders accountable. For example, the current Secretary of Defense got a high-paying job with Raytheon to be on the board of directors following his military retirement, which in itself is unethical. But then he was selected to become the Secretary of Defense. The ethical issues with this conflict of interest are obvious to me. Later that week, on Friday, September 10th, I published a third video titled The United We Stand. In this video, I was trying to communicate my emotional process. I was trying to show all the people who kept calling me crazy that I was just a normal guy. Like all other service members, I asked to kill people in the last 20 years. I wanted to normalize the psychological impact of service members after a failed war. I wanted other service members to see that it's normal to get mad, and that just because you're mad doesn't mean you're bipolar or have mental illness, that it's normal to cry, that it's normal to question why your government asks you to commit violence, that it's normal to demand accountability from the same senior leaders who ask you to commit the violence. At no time in that video did I state I was going to use violence to hold my senior leaders accountable. But again, that is how the message is spun. I posted the video to demonstrate how these emotions are normal, but somehow I was painted as an even crazier than before. Everyone was telling me that I was having a mental breakdown. Following this video, my lawyer was trying to make a deal. But at that time, I felt like my honor and reputation were at stake. I thought the Marine Corps would challenge me without addressing my demands for accountability. Accountability at all. I felt like at that point, if I had taken any agreed-upon deal, I would always have been painted as a stereotypical crazy veteran. I felt like all my valid points would have been forgotten. And to be clear, I am a command-selected battalion commander. Can you imagine a lieutenant corporal demanding accountability for rape or any other valid complaint? How do you think the command would treat those Marines? Do you think the command would be more sympathetic to them than how they have treated me? This whole process, in my opinion, should be a case study on how the system can turn on someone who speaks out. I truly hope going forward that Marine Corps leaders can better tolerate challenges to the system. I ended up deciding to post a fourth video on Thursday, September 16th, to ensure my request for accountability was not forgotten. Posted the video in my uniform because, unlike my previous two videos, I was very controlled and deliberate in the fourth video. The fourth video, I was speaking directly to the general officer. I also stated my intention to prefer legal charges against General McKenzie so that my command, who was trying to hold me accountable, would also be forced to take a formal position on the charges I levied against General McKenzie. But up to this point, they have denied me this right. After I posted the fourth video, my command finally grew tired of reminding me about the social media policy and issued me a gag order. To be clear, I never stated that I would stop posting. I only signed and acknowledged that Colonel Emil gave me a gag order. After signing, I remained silent for the rest of the week on social media. During that week, I was fighting four separate legal battles with four different groups of lawyers. My wife handed me a separation agreement. My business partner initiated a process to buy me out of the company since my name hurt the brand. I was trying unsuccessfully to prefer legal action against General McKenzie, and I was also trying to defend myself against the legal actions being brought towards me by the command. It was a tough week for me, personally and professionally. Then that weekend, on Saturday, September 25th, I deliberately made three posts that violated the gag order. I did so willingly. I knew if I said true things that they heard, that were heard to hard to hear, my command would likely overreact and send me to jail. Felt this overreaction would ultimately bring coverage to my situation and force the general officers to answer tough questions about the hypocrisy of our situation. Phew, I haven't read this much in years. But even though I anticipated my command would send me to jail, when I went into work on Monday, I was very disturbed that Colonel Emil stated on the confinement order that I was a flight risk. To that point, I knew Colonel Emil was very upset with me, but I didn't take it personally. I also sympathized with his responsibility to hold the party line. But when he stated formally that I was a flight risk with absolutely no evidence of this, I felt like he lied to silence and punish me. The truth is that I came into work every day and had responded to every request even after he refused to let me take leave. The only time I failed to communicate with him was the one text he sent me after the second video, which again I felt was appropriately addressed later. I spoke to his XO for 10 minutes. Yet still somehow he listed me on a formal document that I was a flight risk to justify my confinement. While on the brig, I again tried to submit a resignation in lieu of trial, but my command rejected it. They wanted a conviction of guilt. Thus, they obviously signed a plea deal to litany of charges at special court martial, which brings us to today. But the attacks on the Marine Corps continued even after my release. Following my release, the Marine Corps leaked confidential documents to the senior Pentagon journalists for task and purpose. Of note, the Marine Corps placed my medical records in the investigation and then leaked these documents to task and purpose. For them to leak my medical records is truly heartbreaking. Furthermore, I had leaked something to the media. I would have gone back to jail, but no one in the Marine Corps will be held accountable for the leaked documents. In the article ran by Task and Purpose, I was painted as a violent extremist fascist, and the journalist even made a connection to Hitler. Obviously, you can understand that I was very angry following the article. Everything I've been through, I feel it's reasonable to conclude that the Marine Corps and Task and Purpose were working together in an effort to smear my name. I also feel that it's possible Marine Corps was trying to bait me into posting again. This is not the America I know. This is not the America that I have fought so hard to defend the last 17 years. In summary, I was never charged with a false official statement because everything I have said is true. If the Marine Corps could have charged me with, they would have. My statements all center around the fact that I do not believe general officers were held to the same standards as junior leaders. I also believe that similar to post-Vietnam and Marine Corps leadership is trying to spin the narrative about our failures on the junior enlisted without tasking a hard look at themselves. I also believe that once I spoke out, the Marine Corps holistically took every opportunity to attack me and never actually cared about my well-being. But it's hard for Marine Corps to defeat someone who refuses to quit. Going forward, I am still demanding accountability from my senior general officers. Since this endeavor began, and not a single general officer has accepted accountability. Not a single general officer has contacted me directly in any form to de-escalate the situation. Since this endeavor began, I have acknowledged that I should be held accountable for my actions. I am standing here today pleading guilty. This is me accepting accountability. But it deeply pains me that my senior leaders are incapable of being as courageous. Without accountability from our senior leaders, the system cannot evolve, and the military will ultimately keep repeating the same mistakes in the future. It doesn't matter if Staff Sergeant Squad Leader is highly efficient in distributed operations, if the general officers have relegated themselves to yes sir responses. We need senior leaders who possess the moral courage to push back when something doesn't make sense. Furthermore, I understand that my process of criticism was unorthodox and not within official Marine Corps channels. I essentially requested masks in a very public setting. I acknowledged that it was potentially damaging to the Marine Corps reputation, but I felt the conversation and need for change outweighed the potential negative bad press. I did what I did because I thought it was in the best long-term interest of the Marine Corps. I've always wanted to make the Marine Corps better, not damage the Marine Corps. I acknowledge that my actions placed the Marine Corps in a position where they are forced to respond and couldn't quietly hide behind closed doors. My actions were very public and at times very emotional, but I think the emotional roller coaster that I went through is what every service member in this country goes through. The only difference is that my experience is very public, and unlike the 22 service members a day who kill themselves, I decided a long time ago that I will never be broken, no matter the struggle. I will prevail, stronger, post-traumatic growth. But even with that mindset, that doesn't mean I don't experience pain. It doesn't mean I don't experience depression. It doesn't mean I don't take time to cry. If the leaders of the military actually cared about service members and their sacrifices, all the current and previous senior leaders would engage in public discussions about the shortfalls in their decision-making. Senior leaders accepting accountability would heal more service members than any other initiative. The junior service members deserve that from their leadership. I believe the general officers have demonstrated that they aren't able or unwilling to hold themselves accountable. As a result, I believe fundamental changes occur in the military. I am being held accountable for my actions. The general officers should be held accountable for their failures. Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Stu Shepard. Well, that's pretty incredible.
Hoorah! You know, I'm sitting here. I've read that statement several times, as you can imagine, Mark.
Yeah.
You know who I wish would read that, and I pray that reads it? Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, General McKenzie, Secretary of Navy Carlos Del Toro, Major General Alford at Camp Lejeune. By the way, Major General Alford at Camp Lejeune and Colonel Emil didn't even show up for the 2 days at the court-martial to face Lieutenant Colonel Scheller. I found that pretty sorry and sad.
Right.
They accused him, but they couldn't show their face. How did that statement make you feel, Mark?
Like the military is leadership is failing our country, and they are more concerned with how they look than what's really happening. And it's frustrating and angering because so many people are suffering PTSD and other traumas from 20 years on the battlefield, watching their brothers and sisters be taken down and killed, and then to watch as a failed mess in Afghanistan unfold, 13 service members die. It makes me angry. It frustrates the heck out of me. And we left $85 million or billion dollars worth of military equipment in the hands of terrorists it pains me that we left thousands. They won't even tell us the number of how many Americans left behind. Not only that, but people, green card holders too, you know, people that are eligible to be in our country legally, as illegal aliens pour across the country unchecked for COVID or any other sicknesses, and left to the streets of our country because American service members are poorly treated by their leadership and those who are in their command. It's very frustrating, and it irritates me and angers me. And all I can do is live my life as an American that those who serve can be proud that they served for. It's all we can all do. Make sure that you live an exemplary life so that when a service member sees you, you can say, see, these are the kind of people I serve proudly for. And you should want to be that. Crying out loud, this is a travesty what's occurring to Lieutenant Colonel Scheller.
And one of the charges was that it was conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. And I would like to stand here and say he's definitely an officer and a gentleman.
I will say something to every veteran out there, though. You can be proud of Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller. He stood up for you. He stood up and he said your time did matter. Even though the generals and the leadership cannot, you have in Lieutenant Colonel Scheller a leader that has your back.
So we're still waiting for his resignation to be accepted. Although in the plea deal, if he pled guilty, they said they would accept his resignation. They have not. They have no time limit on it. They own him for up to 3 years. They're making his life rather difficult at the time. They also have him under a gag order, and if at any point in time he speaks out, then they can throw him back in the brig for who knows how long. So they're playing games. And we are just asking people to go to istandwithstu.com. We have an area there where you can read that statement again, and you can also sign a petition. You can contact
the Secretary of Navy. His phone number and his email address is there if you'd like to call and ask him to expedite this resignation so we can put this dark, ugly chapter behind us.
So our son has been relieved of his command. He has given up his retirement, which is quite a bit of money. He has had his name dragged through the mud. He has lost his marriage over this, his home. He has given up everything to stand for his service people.
Well, I'm going to say something right now. And I can say this probably goes for a large majority of the folks who will tune into my show, that we, as Americans, back 100% Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller in his efforts to bring accountability to the senior officers that caused the tragedy and other tragedies to occur, like the loss of 13 service members during a bogus Afghanistan withdrawal by an incompetent administration. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it.
That statement was long, but thank you for reading it. I appreciate
it. Yes, indeed.
I do too.
Now, and when I say that's the most I read in one sitting in a long time, you know, I got to read quick. I do quick reading. I got to scan stuff. I'm very busy. So I read things very fastly. So that was pretty impressive for me.
Well, we have asked a lot of people to read it because unless you really know, and just like you said, it made you mad, it frustrated you. Well, you know.
Yeah.
It was difficult as a parent to watch it happen.
It was.
It's crazy.
So
it's
we thank you.
And he's not free yet, or he would be on this show with you right now.
Right. And that link that I sent you earlier in the text message, is a shareable link.
Yes.
People can click on that link and listen to this show again later if they missed it tonight. You can share that all the way around.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
And we're proud to have you guys on. I'm sorry that you have to endure this. Your son is a military hero in my eyes. When I do a live feed, behind me in my live feed is my dad's flag and his military picture. I never served. So like I said, I try to live my life so that those who do serve can be proud that they served for me, if that makes any sense. And
it makes a ton of sense.
And everybody should try that, you know.
Well, we, Stuart, of course, we're proud of our son. We're proud of all of our children and grandchildren, like most all parents. But he has inspired us. He has inspired us to be patriots, to be engaged, to you know, get off the couch and show courage and speak up. And I think that we're seeing that in many aspects in America now. People are following that lead, and if they see an injustice or they see something wrong, I'm seeing more and more people speak up, and I respect and appreciate that. We have to take our country back.
I've been fighting the fight for a long time now with this radio show, trying to at least spread a message of truth and American way of life and freedom. I stand by the Constitution. I am so thankful for those who gave the ultimate sacrifice defending it. And sometimes I wonder, now, is their service in vain now, dying on the battlefield in Afghanistan because of this bogus withdrawal? It's like we surrendered and ran for the hills like a bunch of cowards. It's really horrible. It makes America look terrible on the world stage. We need a strong leader. We need Donald J. Trump back in that White House. I will be voting if he runs for that man, no doubt. It will be my third time, and I will vote for him a fourth time. Until he stops running, I'll keep voting. Because we had respect on the world stage. We had military might. The military was respected. People looked up to us again like the shining city on a hill. And in 9 months, 10 months, one clown took it all down. It's unbelievable.
Well, we are asking people to shine a spotlight on our son's predicament because we don't want to let it go into the dark and pretend like it never happened. We want to keep that light on, the pressure on, so he can be free.
And we are reminding everyone, all Americans, to vote in 2022 and 2024.
Contact your congressperson. Tell them this is not acceptable with you. If they're sitting on the fence, we're telling them this is no time for fence sitting. It's time to stand with Stu. This is not, this is an American issue. We're asking them to stand with Stu. We're asking them to contact their congressperson and apply pressure so that we can get him free.
He
fought for 17 years for everyone else's freedom. He deserves
and
to
you
be
can
free.
Call, folks, you can call your senators and your congressmen.
Yes.
At the D.C. switchboard, 202-224-3121. We have that number memorized in our brain because we use it often. 202-224-3121. And be respectful. Kindly ask for the office of your senator or congressperson. Do it both. Call every day. You know, back when Obama was president, it got to the point where the call screeners were like, "Oh, it's you again, Mr. Hoffman."
Well,
they won't recognize your voice.
And so many people, so many of the senators will say, "Oh, we thought that was over." It's not over. You know, the news media reported that he went to court martial and that he got a light sentence, and everyone thinks it's over. It's not over.
Right.
He's still held
it's not over.
Until
it's over. Now, is there a legal defense fund somewhere that you guys have started, a GoFundMe or something, somewhere where someone can help out with legal fees and other expenses that I'm sure are going to incur over the next number of years as he fights through this?
There is a site at pipehitterfoundation.org. That site was created by Eddie Gallagher, the former Navy SEAL.
He was on my show.
Him and his wife. Yep. So, yes, and if you follow the link for Stuart Scheller, there is a place to donate. And, yes, most of that money will go to replace his pension, to help his wife and children, to pay for legal fees. America, to date, has been incredibly generous, and it's much appreciated. But most of that money will definitely be earmarked and used. Much of it has already been used. But, yes, you can go there and make a small donation if you'd like.
We always try to bring these kind of stories on. We had Eddie Gallagher on. I don't know if you remember the story. I forget his name now. God forgive me forgetting his name. But he was a young soldier who made a wrong turn and wound up in Mexico.
I don't remember that one.
Well, he was down on the border, and he got forced into a lane, and he wound up in Mexico, and he didn't have a passport on him or nothing like that, and they threw him in jail and everything. It was horrible. Yeah, it was horrifying how they treated him. Yeah, so I had him on the show, and Border Patrol agent Brian Terry, I had his family on. This is very important. I think this is important. I think people need to hear what's really happening in their country, what's going on behind the scenes. You know, because the media is covering for them. They don't report it. If it's not anti-conservative, they're not reporting it. So when it goes against their narrative and their agendas, they hide it, they cover it up, and they put it behind them like nothing ever happened. And so we have tragedies and things like this occurring where the truth's not being told. The media is a arm of the Democrat Party now. They are a leftist propaganda wing, viewing falsehoods, false truths, half-truths, and lies for some reason. And I don't understand why they want to bring down our country. It seems like the Democrats and the media want to end America. They want us over. They want to end this great experiment started by our forefathers 245 years ago. I don't understand it. A lot of these people are my generation, were born in the mid and late 60s. And are now running the country and running the businesses and running the show. And where? It's us. It's my – which I can't fathom is my generation, because they all went to the same schools I did, learned the same lessons I did. And I came out patriotic – and I grew up in New York, of all places. And I still am patriotic, love the Constitution, God, guns, government, crying out loud. You know, the system, it's amazing. If they followed the Constitution and did what they were supposed to do, it's an amazing, amazing, amazing country and system. But people usurp the system, and they cause all kinds of trouble. Stu, Kathy, I want to tell you what I think about January 6th, even though this isn't what happened, but it could be the cause. Maybe, just maybe, a large number of those people in that crowd had this Constitution in their pocket, and they were reading how it's their duty, when the government no longer represents them, to cast them out and elect a new form of government that will represent them. Maybe they were just thinking about their constitutional duty at that time. Maybe they were feeling that their president was robbed and cheated in a bogus election that had no election security or integrity. And maybe, just maybe, they were in the mood to cast out the government and elect a new one. I can't say for sure. I don't know. And for one brief moment while watching this occur, a camera on the inside showed all those folks, elected officials, scrambling around, hiding and ducking behind desks and scared for their life. And I was thinking to myself, well, there you have it. The government fears the people. That there is liberty at its finest. And it was amazing just for that 1 second. Then they broke in. Man, if they didn't break in, they had them scared. They had them dead to rights. They were shaking in their shoes. They should have never broke in. They were being effective, but they didn't have that camera angle on the inside. And so they didn't see what was happening. And so they broke in. And some of those folks were just there for the photo op. They weren't criminals. They were just caught up in the frenzy. They were caught up in the excitement, and they meandered casually into the Capitol as the police held the door open and said, welcome.
Some of those folks are still in jail, and they haven't even been charged, is what I understand.
Yes, yes. Well, this is very common nowadays. Back when I first was starting my show back in 2014, there were a couple of cases where some patriotic Americans who made a stand and were held in violation of their constitutional rights for, unlawful detention, no bail. They had their Fourth and Eighth Amendment rights just trampled on left and right by these tyrants, and we called them the P3s, Patriot Political Prisoners. And there's still a couple that are still in jail, and they're not going to get out for a long, long time, because they stood up for the American right to assemble, and got caught up in it, and they charged them. It's really scary that we have political prisoners in America held by our own government. It's just unbelievable. And I want you guys to know that that I'm right here at the end of the show, that we support, we back you guys. I will seek out all these, or if you can email me the links or text me the link to the pipe hitters and all your organizations, and I'll get them posted onto my radio pages as soon as possible so that we can try to keep the thing going and help out and do what we can to keep the ball rolling in a positive direction for you guys.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. We'll send it to you tonight, and we thank all of your listeners. Keep the prayers coming, and call your congresspeople. That's all we can ask. Thank you very much.
And this is a fantastic version of the Star Spangled Banner that I'm going to play here in a second. But you want to stick around for this because I got a great announcement coming up. First, on November 4th, we got a gentleman. He's a Christian rap artist from the Tampa Bay area. His name is Bryson Gray. He did a song, Let's Go Brandon. And the reason he did a song as a Christian rap artist was all the Let's Go Brandon songs were filled with profanity. So he wanted a clean one that he could play for his kids. Bryson Gray will be on the 4th. He'll be joining us with his song, Let's Go Brandon, the clean version, the Christian version. And then, November 11th, live right here on the Patriot Nation radio show, the one and only, finally rescheduled after many, many moons, the one and only, Roger Stone joins us. So that should be good. So you want to make sure you join us, folks. That's the 4th and the 11th. That's two shows coming up. And with that, I want to say good night. God bless everybody. And check this out. Don't hang up, Stu and Kathy. This is my friend Dave Bray. This is his version of the Star Spangled Banner. We always close the show with the Star Spangled Banner. Because at Patriot Nation Radio, we rise for the flag and we kneel for the cross. This is Dave Bray, and you can get this version at DaveBrayUSA.com. Music on a Mission Storytell Edition, you can find it on YouTube, Spotify, you know, all the spots. It's the Star Spangled Banner. Check it out. Please rise. Thanks for tuning in, because as you know, without you, there is no Patriot Nation Radio. So keep the faith, keep on rocking, and let's do this, folks, until we meet again next week. Good night, and God bless. Love you all. Peace.